is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we're exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and we are going to crack them wide open. Hopefully this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or at the very least can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love. I'm your host from Arkansas, Jared Mays, and joining me once again this week from Texas, Dr. Kevin Burt.
Gentlemen, good to see you. Good to be back in the saddle, in the cockpit. What are we driving here? AT-AT? Anyway, good to be back.
Definitely a Millennium Falcon, and I don't want to sit in Chewie's hairy seat. You know, that thing stinks. sitting in a much nicer smelling seat, maybe, who knows, from Massachusetts, Mr. Scott Howland. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing pretty good. I'd prefer to be riding a Rancor. That looks like it could be fun.
Ooh, nice.
I once rode an elephant when I was doing my study abroad in Zambia, and they have really leathery, prickly skin. Like, you got to wear jeans when you ride them because their skin is so coarse. I can imagine having the same problem with Rancors.
I need to wear accurate. Some
like leather chaps, like you're riding a motorcycle or something. Well, you don't. You don't need to wear leather chaps to be able to listen to this episode. To our wonderful, esteemed listeners, thank you for being patient with us. We've been a little slower cranking out the episodes, going through a nice job transition. It's a lot of fun, but I gotta admit, guys, the listeners have been clamoring for another episode. I've got a few messages sitting in my inbox of people saying, when are you going to do another show? And do another show. And if you don't, I'm going to hunt you down and duct tape your face to the microphone. Until you do another show. So guys, we're going to do another show. What do you say?
Yeah.
Sounds good. Duct tape doesn't sound good for acoustics.
Duct tape. I don't know if that would work well. I do have several different flavors of duct tape. What do you call like varieties of
colors?
Colors. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure what kind of flavored duct tape.
It is Arkansas. You never know. We do love our duct tape. Well, we also love our Star Wars. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. And Christian theology. Scott, this is your episode. What are we going to do?
So after watching, you know, the Book of Boba Fett and especially the Book of Boba Fett, seeing how Din Djarin, after he finishes up with Grogu and stuff like that, he's back bounty hunting and he goes right back to his old culvert. And a lot of people have been saying, that, okay, he doesn't have to do that stuff anymore. He doesn't have to obey what the armorer was saying, but he just goes right back into that mode of how he was brought up. You know, whatever relationship he was with the Mandalorians, and the new Mandalorians he met were just making fun of him and didn't really try and teach him anything about what Mandalore was. So he just went back to what he did. And also in the same series, you got Boba Fett being taught by the Tusken Raiders, and then how it changed him into this whole new philosophy of not being a bounty hunter anymore, and whatever, you know, all that, the growth that he was going through. So I kind of want to explore a little bit of that tonight.
Some deep stuff. Really glad we didn't spend too much time in small talk at the top of the show. We got a lot. I can tell you guys about how I'm going to go to Star Wars Celebration next month. I mean, oh, we got a lot to talk about, but we'll get there.
I'm officially jealous.
Yeah.
Are you?
Is there some like special rate for Star Wars podcasters that we can get in on this?
Well, considering like half the people attending are Star Wars podcasters.
at a minimum half.
Yeah, I think we probably need to put more than 13 episodes in the can in order to have the legitimacy we need. They do have, you know, like, a podcast stage, so like podcasts can apply to do live podcasts at the show. Also, considering that we're religious, it's highly doubtful. But maybe it's so niche that we'd be interesting. We'll work on that for next year.
I like that. Hey, we've been doing this for a whole year though. Like,
that's right.
We had an episode last Easter about resurrection. Yeah, we've been doing this for a year.
Yeah, listeners, you can send birthday cakes in the mail. We're in three different states, so we're going to need three cakes. But, you know, hey, they'd be appreciated. Scott's address is... No, we won't do that. the fact of the matter is, guys, it has been a pleasure to podcast together for a year now. You know, maybe we can average more than one a month for this year, but
that would be a good goal.
Nevertheless, it has been one a month.
Yeah,
definitely. Definitely. Well, indoctrination is a really good topic for us to talk about, because this is a sticking point. You know, how do we deal with passing on our faith to the next generation? How do we do so in a way that teaches discernment and wisdom and level-headedness, that's not putting the next generation at odds with the world? How does Din Djarin go about passing on his beliefs to generation, you know, other foundlings he might, you know, Grogu? How do you do so in such a way that is fair, without just making it, you know, trying to replicate yourself? There's a lot here for us to talk about. What is it, especially about this topic, Scott, that had you saying we've got to talk about this on Hyperspace Theology?
Well, I mean, it seems to be something that comes up a lot. You see how different religions have splintered into different things, and people hold very fast to all those little differences instead of trying to embrace the common, you know, like. Yeah, I can't even be. You guys are probably a little more knowledgeable about all the different segregations of like what Christianity is broken
denominations.
Into. Uh-huh. Denominations. Thank you. It really struck me when Din Djarin came back and she asked him, "Have you removed your helmet?" And you know, we as the audience think, "Oh, he's moved past that. He's taken his helmet off twice." At least twice, maybe.
Yeah,
three times.
He's grown,
and sure. So he had some growth there. He's met other Mandalorians that don't exactly believe this, but yeah, he goes back to how he was raised. He goes back to, you know, for you know, lack of better term, the known and stuff. And then he's very, you know, what do I have to do to amend? What do I have to do to amend? And so that kind of stuck with me, and it was running around in my head a little bit when I was thinking about that. And I thought about what you know. How that kind of also mirrored a little bit Boba Fett when he meets up with the Tusken Raiders. And first he's just like a slave to Dig. And then he proves himself. And then he learns the value of having a family and a tribe and takes that going forward into his new life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. You make a good point about the fact that when she asks him about the helmet, you expect him to say, you know, to have a good response here. Like that's not what makes a Mandalorian. And instead he wants to belong. He wants to fit into the system, but realizes he's now at odds with his original clan. Yeah. Yeah.
She even calls Bo-Katan a false prophet or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. It's very explicitly religious language. Yeah. The theologian in me was just drooling at the mouth in that scene. There was so much I wanted to talk about. I'm going to toss it to you, Kevin. What's your interpretation of the Mandalorian's relationship with his belief system?
Yeah, so Mando, after having his experiences with Grogu, I think in some ways it's kind of like how somebody who goes to a summer church camp, and at first they're not really sure what's going on, but then by the end of it, they're like, yeah, this is amazing. I feel like a changed person. And then they get back into the rest of their lives, and they go home and they get back into everything. And for a lot of times, even a lot of people, it's really easy to just kind of fall back into that old way of living. How, you know, whatever that way of living was, whether it was, you know, fairly moral or nihilistic. I mean, anywhere on that spectrum is possible. And it's just, it strikes me as when Mando goes back to his, to the armor and the others that he has there with him, he does seem like he has kind of fallen back in with that same old crowd. And it's, I don't know if conversion is the right language to describe it. But especially when we get to Boba Fett, It's interesting hearing other Star Wars podcasters and internet pundits talk about why Boba Fett is different. And I'm watching these things screaming at the TV because y'all don't understand conversion. You don't understand how this, sure, like how this is an actual thing that happens to people and they genuinely change. Teaching doctrine and the more negative side of that indoctrination is all part of conversion. So there's some moderately coherent thoughts to put together for all this that maybe there's some.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. Let's talk more about that. The fact is he had a certain set of beliefs. His clan had indoctrinated him with this is the way things are. There's very black and white. You might call it a cult, you know, that he belonged to. It was you had to fit in this just the right way. Very strict rules. We're tabs on you. I mean, I know people who have been in literal cults. I know people. And one of the things is you have people checking up on you to make sure that you are following the rules and doing things just the right way. You know, personally, my own religious conversion, I'm not talking about as an 8-year-old, 10-year-old, hearing the gospel story and choosing to obey and follow Jesus and to put on Christ in baptism and say, I'm going to belong to this community of faith. I need forgiveness of my sins. I want to receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. I'm talking about a conversion that said what I believed is not consistent with what I'm now finding in the Bible. I went through it, you know, 18, 19 years old. I identified more with the Pharisees than I did with Jesus. It was a terrifying realization to have to come to and to say, maybe the people who taught me, like they meant well, but not everything about that is what I'm finding in scripture. But for me personally, my guiding light is Romans 8, this idea that there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus, the idea that there's freedom in the Spirit, there's life in the Spirit. The Spirit helps us in our prayer, helps us in our weakness. Nothing can separate us from the love of Christ. That's my basic paradigm that then everything else comes out of. And as such, you know, the Mandalorian had this very strict set of beliefs that he was taught to believe and has been slowly shaped to adopt another set that is kind of caught in the middle. Kevin, let's follow up on the idea of doctrine versus indoctrination. Why is it important that we have some disambiguation here between the terms?
Yeah. Pre-show here, we were looking at trying to figure out precisely, you know, kind of what language we need to use. And I just looked up the definition of indoctrination. And it says the process of teaching a person or a group to accept a set of beliefs uncritically. And that last word there is the operative word, uncritically, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with teaching a person or a group to accept a set of beliefs. I mean, you have to do that. All of us have gone through school at some point or another. And if you're into the hard sciences, there are some things that you have to operate with, some beliefs you have to have. And same is true for the social sciences. Same is true for anybody wanting to do anything along the lines of ministry or something along those lines. But the key for indoctrination, what gives it that negative connotation, is this word uncritically. If you're not willing to even have a conversation, you can quickly run into some issues. The armorer mentions Bo-Katan and says that she is a cautionary tale, which is interesting because it looks like the armorer's helmet has the horns on it that are reminiscent of Darth Maul when he ruled Mandalore.
So yeah.
You want to talk about cautionary tales?
I've heard that before.
It looks that way. That seems reasonable to me, at least.
She's definitely from a more militant sect, at least that what we understand the Clone Wars, right?
I think so.
Didn't they say that she was from the Watch, which I believe sounds I took right as to Night me. Watch.
What is it called? The Death Watch, right? I think I'm due for a rewatch of Mando season 1-2, Book of Boba Fett. The fact of the matter is, I'm in the middle of research paper writing mode for grad school, and we're 2 weeks out from Easter here. It's crunch time, absolute crunch time for me. So, middle of the summer, surely I'll get to it. Yeah, excellent point. The fact that even the definition there tags on the word uncritically, to accept beliefs uncritically. I was saying to Scott, you know, before the episode, that doctrine itself in the Bible is not a dirty word. I think in our culture, it is, that doctrine carries these dogmatic religious overtones. Mm-hmm. That means any kind of belief system is oppressive. Biblically, it does not carry the connotation of oppression. Does that sound about right to you, Scott?
Yeah, that sounds good. One other thing I was thinking about was like other examples within the movies. And I just recently watched the entire prequel trilogy, and all in one day.
And, oh, I'm sorry.
Way to go.
And well, I followed it up with Rogue One at the end, so I had a nice, you know, aftertaste.
Little dessert afterwards.
Yes.
Nothing quite says, Scott, I'm going to be back at work soon, quite like I watched 4 Star Wars movies in one day.
So Qui-Gon is, you know, talked about being very wise and a powerful Jedi, yet he's not on a council because he doesn't follow what they want to be, you know, for lack of a better term, he doesn't follow the company line. He doesn't toe the company line. Right. And he thinks critically of what they're doing. And all of it really popped into my head. Like a lot of that stuff synced up when you mentioned that in the pre-show about uncritically, because now you have everybody else who's on the council is all, nope, this is how we have to do it. Nope, he's too old. You know, it doesn't matter how powerful he is. We'll just let him go wherever he wants to, and someone else will teach him the Force. You know, that is not thinking critically. You know, and Qui-Gon was taken off of the council for that. So I'm sure, Jared, you know more the reasons.
Well, I don't know that he was taken off as much as he had the chance to join in the book Master and Apprentice. He had the chance to join, and then they either lost his opportunity, it was revoked, or, you know, rejected it because, you know, he did not. I love the way you said it, toe the company line. He did not have the same set of ideology as the council. It was more of a rogue, a loose cannon, if you will. That's an excellent example. Qui-Gon, absolutely one of the most misunderstood Star Wars characters of all time, but a beautiful one when viewed through the religious perspective. Somebody who doesn't quite fit, but he's still a part of the system, and that's what I like. There's a couple of years ago, things had gotten so heated with the political strife in the country. The polarization had gotten so stark that it felt like the two tribes were saying, if you don't see things my way, you are the villain in my story. Right? If you don't see things, there's no wiggle room for disagreement.
Yeah.
And my brother-in-law, Jeremy, who's a missionary in Peru, said this incredible, and it was really hard for my wife to hear at the time. I remember her being so angry that he said this, and now she says it like every day. She's passing it along to like everybody she knows, which is, there's room for diversity of beliefs in the church, specifically talking about among Christians. There's room for diversity of opinion. And in fact, not just room for it, but it's a good thing. It makes us better. It's a beautiful thing. We sharpen one another. We can have tough conversations and maintain love, maintain civility. Because there's room, even on, I almost called it the Jedi Council, the apostles, even among the apostles, there's a couple of different, you could call them political parties represented among the apostles. I mean, you've got zealots, there's Herodians, there are among the apostles, Galileans. I mean, Peter and John, no, James and John, they're ready to call down fire on Samaria. You know, they've got such intense hatred for this group. The fact of the matter is, Jesus maintains in his own inner circle diversity of belief. That's why Qui-Gon, I think, is, I'm on a diatribe here now, Qui-Gon is such a good example of the fact that he still is a part of the system. He's still a part of the community. He's not turned in his lightsaber and his Jedi robes. He's still a Jedi, even though he doesn't see things eye to eye with the council. Either you guys want to speak to the fact that it's a good thing to have some differences of opinion, some diversity of belief within the church, and maintain loving civil unity.
Yeah, one of my best friends from my doctoral program, first semester or so, we were in a seminar class that about every 3 weeks we were presenting kind of short little research papers based on whatever topic we were talking about at the time. And several of his dealt with a particular theme in the New Testament, particularly in Jesus' teaching sections in the New Testament. And I thought, okay, I kind of feel like I know where this guy might land, at least politically. And I find myself usually a little bit more to the other side on this issue. But as we continue to go through that first year, first semester, and then the first year, we got to be really good friends and had multiple opportunities throughout our whole time together during that program, talking very openly and honestly about, you know, I might see things more this way, you might see things more this way, but because we both know how each other has a heart to serve the church, how specifically the people in the church who are in need in various ways, whether it's meeting emotional or spiritual needs or physical needs, or financial needs or whatever, we both feel very strongly that, hey, the church has got to do something about this. The church has got to be part of alleviating the suffering around us. And so although we would land on different sides of some issues, never once did I think you're the enemy. Mm-hmm. And had perhaps had the council, not the apostolic council, but had the Jedi council been willing to have a little more open-mindedness about this kind of thing, somebody like Qui-Gon might have been able to convince them. Maybe we'd have been approaching the system wrongly. I'm gonna leave that there because I could go on for a while about that, but
that's a great point.
I'll drop that there.
I like the idea that you could see the same issue and say the church has to meet this, even if you didn't see eye to eye on exactly how.
Sure.
But it came from the same heart for people. Kevin, you are Kevin, as other guy. Scott, you want to touch on this one?
I just think that sometimes if you have differing opinions and someone says, well, I see this in this light, and you may have not seen it that way, and it might not have changed your mind particularly, but it could still give you a moment of pause and a moment to say, okay, so there's other views out there. There's other things to see. And you kind of have to come to a, I don't know about come to an agreement, but you know, if you can understand what some other people are thinking, I think that can only help if you're trying to communicate with them and stuff. I'm doing a poor job of communicating right now, but
you know, it's about having empathy. Sure. I had a brother there in Lemonster, Scott, who he and I had a really intense, difficult conversation about one of the big political hot button issues a year ago or so last summer. And at the end of it, we did not see eye to eye, nor did we at the beginning of the conversation. And I left a little frustrated on what he believed on a couple of the points. And I think he left feeling the same way about me, but we continued to be civil to one another, to love one another, to text each other, you know, encouraging things from time to time. And then as I was leaving, I just had to say, you know what? You didn't change my mind, but your conversation has certainly been, your criticism has rattled around in my head in a constructive way. And it has challenged me in a way that has caused me to look at the world differently and to look at myself differently. And this is a kind of, I think, helpful deconstruction, the kind of helpful questioning, helpful criticism. I mean, like looking at life and our own belief system critically, that is good. Now, the fact of the matter is, it is possible to question your beliefs in a way that leads to destruction. I'll give you this example. After my mother had died, I was going through a really nasty crisis of faith 5 years ago. I felt like the rug had been pulled out from under me. Everything I thought I believed, I wasn't sure I could continue to believe it. It was just going to be a period of needing to ask some tough questions. I didn't like having to ask them because I felt like prior to that, I had all the answers and I was happy with that. And it was sickening on my darkest days to consider the fact that I had no belief system. To think about, if I really do give up what I believe. Where do I go next? It was absolutely crushing to have nothing. Now, this is the important point I want to make on this particular episode about questioning your belief system, is do something constructive with it. Stay connected to your community of faith. Stay connected to wise counsel. Don't deconstruct in a vacuum, because you'll lose yourself. Either you guys want to add to this particular point about questioning within a framework, or deconstructing safely.
I think a lot of times it comes down to how conversations like you were talking about are approached. And if everybody can just have civil discourse about things, you don't have to convince me of something, you know, but as long as we have the conversation. And I think making sure you keep it on a civil level instead of starting the name call and get super judgy about stuff about, oh, no, you have to think of it my way. You know, I think as long as you can keep that communication open, that's always a positive, no matter if you've changed someone's mind or not.
Yeah, there's one good piece of advice. Keep communication open and be civil. Good. Kevin, how about you?
I've actually been teaching a Wednesday night class on how to work through the stage of deconstruction, like how to successfully kind of navigate the stage of deconstruction.
Pitched you a softball.
Yeah. The title of that class is called "Is There Life After Doubt?" And the idea, several of the ideas that we've been working through here last week, I'll mention this one because I mentioned it this morning in the class I taught, is learning how to tend to yourself, learning how to kind of name and explain really the things that you feel. The phrase these days is learning how to feel your feelings, basically.
Okay.
goodness. Anakin was trying to do that.
Oh, that's a good example.
With Yoda. He was trying to do that with Yoda, and all Yoda could give him was, don't be sad, because they become the Force, and let go of all these things. And man, Yoda, Yoda did not allow Anakin the opportunity to believe for a moment that his feelings were valid. Hmm. And obviously Palpatine manipulated that in a pretty spectacular fashion.
Oh, wow, what a great point. Absolutely. Allow people the space to ask questions. And it's okay to sit with them in their hurt. If their questions come from a place of hurt, to say, if somebody's lost a child, for example, to say, this is an injustice. This is a tragedy. And I'm not going to give you a quaint explanation to help you feel better. And that's one of the beautiful things about the book of Job. His friends at first sat with him in his pain, and they were just present. They were just there. It was when they tried to explain away the problem and to rationalize things that they made things worse, right? To make Job feel bad. Like, you surely sinned. Let's just figure out what the sin is. And that wasn't helpful advice. Ah, excellent point. Allow people the space to feel what they feel, to ask the questions, point them toward Jesus. That's another important point, that Jesus lets people to feel angry, to feel hurt, to feel lost. And then he comes in and says, I offer living water, right? Just a few really good examples in Star Wars of this. Anakin's a good one. Qui-Gon's a good one. Obviously, Din Djarin's whole dilemma. We'll see how that all works out. You've got a couple more listed here, Scott, before I move on to biblical examples. Talk about Chira Imwe.
He was completely convinced. You know, he was there guarding the temples when nobody else cared about him. And he wasn't a Force user. He was just potentially like Force sensitive. But he had no real connection to these temples as a Force user, but he was still there defending and standing up for the temples and standing up for the Jedi way and stuff like that, you know?
And he's side by side with Baze.
Yep.
Baze Malbus.
Who completely didn't agree, who didn't believe at all.
But it seems to me that he did believe and had lost his faith, right? it's one of the most powerful stories. Somebody who struggled with doubt.
He believed in Turret.
At least by the time of Rogue One,
he believed in the Force. He believed in Turret.
Yeah, he stuck to his friend. And then, of course, you know, spoiler alert for Rogue One, comes to believe, at least in some form or fashion, right? You're laughing, Scott, Kevin. Can I not spoil Rogue One?
Maybe. You know, it wasn't until like just last year that we'd watched Solo. So anyway,
that sounds like a you problem.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not a Star Wars problem.
Goodness, Scott, I don't know why I hadn't seen this before, but yeah, that's exactly right. Bass, he believes in his friend, and that in and of itself is extraordinarily powerful. That kind of helped to chip away. I've said this a number of times in ministry contexts, and I think it's relevant here. The most meaningful relationships we have are always transformative. They're always transformative. And you can see that in, Obi-Wan and Anakin. You can see that especially with Anakin and Ahsoka. You can see that with Din Djarin and Grogu. You know, there's the most meaningful relationships we have are transformative. And there in Rogue One, great example. Han and Chewie, you know, name a more iconic duo, right? than Han and Chewie. But that's the kind of thing. And the indoctrinations that Han experienced over the years. Indoctrination, I don't know. He just seemed maybe more cynical. I'm not sure if indoctrination is probably the best word for Han. Because he seemed like
the other end of the spectrum.
It may be, yeah. And we've talked about him with doubt before, too, and where he does come to believe it's true. All of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. These are good examples. Baze, I think, is an example. If in fact, my premise is true that he was a believer who had fallen off, but stuck close to his friend and at least stayed connected to Chirrut. He's a good example of somebody who had done some deconstructing that left him cynical. It left him lost. And there's actually a few different biblical examples of people who don't handle this well. And there are examples, this is important, there are examples of those who question appropriately in a way that leads to something constructive. So are you guys familiar with the story of Demas, the companion of Paul?
Demas?
Yeah, D-E-M-A-S. I'm saying it like an Arkansan. There's a town in Arkansas called Dumas, and that's how I'm saying this, Demas. Okay, he's a minor character in the New Testament. He comes up, you know, just a handful of mentions. He's not somebody like Timothy or Barnabas or Silas, who is like an active, ongoing player. He is seems to be mentioned as one of the fellow workers imprisoned alongside Paul in Rome, mentioned in Colossians chapter 4, for example. But then in at the end of Paul's ministry, in 2 Timothy chapter 4, there's some sad news. Demas, because he has loved this world, has deserted me and has gone to Thessalonica. The idea is he was a companion of Paul, somebody who was going on missionary journeys, risking life and limb, was imprisoned alongside Paul, who then had this crushing experience of having been, you know, punished for his good deeds, felt like God had abandoned him. I'm editorializing a bit here. And then the clue in 2 Timothy is has loved this world and has deserted Paul. So came to love more, you know, the passions of the flesh, whatever the case may be. We don't know what his temptation is that he gave into. And that's the last we know of Demas. There are other examples, though, of people in Scripture who were able to question positively. Perhaps the greatest shining light example, at least for me growing up in Churches of Christ. Kevin, you grew up in Churches of Christ as well. Are you familiar with the church in Berea?
The church in Berea, yes, I am. Yeah.
What's so iconic about the church in Berea? Scott, let me try to find the passage in Acts where this is mentioned. Well,
they get a shout out. Yeah, they get a shout out and a favorable comparison with the churches in the town over, that these folks were more noble than their neighbors, and they search the scriptures daily or intently to determine if what they were being taught was true. Sort of a model.
But this is a commendable quality, is that they heard the preaching that was coming from these evangelists, and then they went back to scripture to fact check, right? So no fake news there in Berea, that's for sure. They were diligent Bible students. And because of that, it enhanced their faith. They came to greater belief. At least that's the way that it's been told to me, editorializing from Acts chapter 17. Scott, had you heard about that one before?
I have not. Or Aaron, I fell asleep when you were preaching.
Show up to church next week. You go around to folks next week in Leominster and you say, "What do you know about the church in Berea?" But you're going to have some eyes light up, my friend. We love this story. It's a good example of doing your homework after Bible class. But I think to tonight's episode, the fact that you don't have to hear uncritically, even to a podcast, right? Do some fact checking, do some digging, and it might lead you to greater faith, even if it's not exactly what was being said by the folks who were doing the initial evangelizing in the first place. Arrive at your own opinions. And this is something I'm telling my kids. You know, they're hearing some stuff in school. We just had the big evolution talk the other day with my 7-year-old. She was in tears saying, "What if the things I'm learning in school aren't true?" And I was like, "Honey, some of the stuff you're hearing in church probably isn't true either. So what you've got to do is weigh everything on both sides with good judgment. Ask adults who you trust. Pray about it. Let's go to the Bible together. Let's do some Google searching together. Hey, let's just make up your own opinion. You don't have to believe things exactly like I do. What I want you to do, though, is ask good questions. You keep asking those questions. God invented our inquisitive minds for a reason. He's not against us asking questions. Can you guys think of any other biblical examples of people who either positively or negatively questioned their belief system?
I always come back to I think it's in Matthew 23 when Jesus, they're crossing a lake and then there's a big storm and then Jesus dismisses it and everybody's surprised. Like, haven't you seen him do stuff before? Haven't you, you know, they didn't believe that he could do that. You know, that's kind of one of the things I always get.
The disciples are always amazed.
You have witnessed
Jesus
him do things.
Miracles.
It's not like people telling you things third hand. You have actually witnessed him do stuff, and they are still surprised when he does something miraculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Certainly. It's a good example. I think about Thomas. Thomas, I just preached, just taught in class this morning, John 14. And Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." And Thomas says, "Now, how can we know the way? You haven't shown us. Where are we going?" He's full of these questions of, we just can't quite see the rhyme or reason, and we're going to need a better map. Jesus says, "You can know the way to the Father because you have known and seen me." Thomas asks questions but stays connected. He's a good example on the positive side. Judas, on the other hand, you know, doesn't ask the appropriate questions. He gives up, and it's a sad story.
Yeah.
In the other skies.
Probably one of the other most famous examples is when there's a man named Saul en route to go arrest more Christians. And he's confronted with a voice from heaven that says, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" And he asks the question, "Who are you, Lord?" Meaning, who am I persecuting that is your representative? And Saul, and all of his pride and, you know, his heritage and pedigree and everything, he asks a question and is willing to be humbled by the answer.
Yeah, that's good.
And talk about somebody who had been indoctrinated.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I think that what Paul is seeking to achieve in leading people to faith in Jesus Christ is to be a witness of the resurrection, to present the facts, and then to lead people into relationship with Christ, the life of faith, as opposed to just re-indoctrinate them with a new set of do things exactly in this certain way. Now, those early churches were figuring it out as they went. And he, from time to time, is the bumpers as he writes the epistles to say, this is out of bounds on this side, and this is out of bounds on the other. And in the middle is following Jesus. We stay on this road of discipleship together. There's one more example I want to draw our attention to, and that is that of John the Baptist. John the Baptist, of course, this kind of flashy prophet, you know, in his exotic garb and his controversial message leading this sect in the desert, the anti-temple kind of revolution. John the Baptist, we kind of stop. He does the introduction to Jesus and gets out of the way. There's one other little instance, little story of John the Baptist that I think gets buried, and that is when John the Baptist doubts Jesus. This is in Matthew 11 and Luke 7. He sends a messenger as he's imprisoned, is on his deathbed, in other words, and he sends a messenger to Jesus with the question, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? This great evangelist of Jesus, preparing the way for Jesus on his deathbed, sends a message to say, are you all that you're cracked up to be, or did we fail? Were we wrong? I'd like to think John the Baptist comes around in the end. We don't totally get the whole conclusion to that story. It's good to ask these kinds of questions. Is Jesus really the Christ? For me personally, asking this question, as I was going through my period of doubt, is Jesus truly the Son of God, the Messiah? Did he rise from the dead? These questions for me were transformative. And it took some tough digging, but I'm glad I asked the questions in the first place. Let me ask you guys, how does it all end with Din Djarin? How does he come to reckon with his faith community, his identity as a Mandalorian? Does his questioning of his beliefs, does he end up in a healthier place, or does he revert to his cult upbringing? Does he go through the trial that she tells him to go through? What is it, the volcano of the, she tells him to go somewhere.
The mines.
Living waters under Mandalore.
Okay.
I think he's going to try. I think he's going to try, and my hope is he's going to learn at least to think a little more critically along the way. Maybe he gets, I mean, it's assumed that he's going to have to come in contact with Bo-Katan because he's got what Bo-Katan wants. So hopefully in that whole mashup of him trying to purify himself, that he learns, or at least asks some more questions about, you know, what's her deal? What, you know, how come they're doing all this other stuff that he's not been taught or acting differently? So that's my hope for the next season. So,
yeah, I hope that when he comes to head with Bo-Katan, that he doesn't just try to, you know, decapitate her or something. You know, I hope he instead asks some digging questions. What does it mean that you're a cautionary tale? What are you not telling me? Let me make up my own mind for myself. That would be a healthy step, I think, in the right direction. What do you think, yeah, Kevin?
I'm expecting to see some confrontation, either physical or, you know, a conversation with the armor, with the sect that Din Djarin has grown up in. And at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if the conversation turns on this point where, you know, the remaining members of the culvert say, this is the way. And Din Djarin responds, no, there is another way. And that is kind of the culmination, the baptism, the whatever you want to call it. That is the moment where we see, oh, okay, now he's really going to strike out on his own. And what happens from there? I don't know.
I think that, especially if they are living waters, is that what they called them? Living waters?
I believe it. They said the living waters under Mandalore is what, okay, I believe she said.
Time for a rewatch. And on that note, that's going to do it for this episode of Hyperspace Theology. I have got some watching to do. How about y'all? Well, we are happy that you are along for the ride with us. Kevin, what's been going on with your other side hustle, my friend, Faith in the Folds?
Yeah, so at the time of recording, we are just two episodes left in the series on the New Testament. We've got Dr. Con Campbell, a brilliant New Testament scholar from Down Under, talking with us about the letters
from
John.
I hope you didn't
John.
Use that accent for him.
I didn't. I decided not to insult him by doing my Aussie accent. Although in high school and college, the first couple of years of college, I dated a girl from Australia for 3 years. And so I felt like I knew this guy pretty well because Aussies are usually pretty chill. And then also Dr. Michael Gorman to talk with us about the Book of Revelation. And after that, I'm done with the New Testament series. We're going to strike out into some other things. I've got ideas that that I want to pursue with the podcast, and so I'm looking forward to it. I might even be willing to guest host this trio here for a little episode on something that's perhaps maybe more overtly religious, since my podcast is more overtly religious than this one.
Cool. I'm interested to hear more about that. So you got Robbo Lim for Jude and Second
Jude
Peter?
And Second Peter. Yeah,
that's exciting. I love
Rob's a good guy. I like him a lot.
Excellent. Can't wait to listen to that. Got a road trip coming up. Cue it up. Well, guys, you can cue up this. You can cue up Faith in the Folds. Nevertheless, we want you to know that we'd like to hear from you. Remember, you can submit an episode topic for us. Yeah, you might even get a shout out on the show. And remember, we'll be back soon with another episode. God bless, and may the Force be with you.